run is just one of several shafts in the number 3 Robina mine, and number 3 is just one of the sections of the Big Robina, the world's largest coal mine now in operation. Frosty Run, of course, is the spot which now has the attention of the world, the sympathy of the world. The story that's going on right now at Frosty Run is a story that's as old as coal mining, a story as old as Western Pennsylvania. It's the story of coal mining because as long as there have been coal mines, as long as man and machine have been hungry for coal, there have been mine disasters. And as long as there have been mine disasters, there have been things like the things going on right now at Frosty Run. Things like weeping women, things like the dirty-faced giants who are working on the rescue teams, things like the worried men of management, things like ambulances, stretchers, pots of coffee, doctors and nurses. This is what the union organizers talk about when they say the industrial power of this country has been built with the blood and the guts of men who dig for coal. Right now at Frosty Run, the situation is almost exactly the same as it was just a few hours after the big explosion tore through tunnel number 8 at 1:15 last Thursday afternoon, with one big exception. The rescue operation is now finding bodies, the bodies toward which they've been working so long and so hard. It's apparent the story is coming toward its end, and it's also apparent that the ending will be pretty much as we had feared it would be, that all 37 missing men have been killed by the explosion. Hundreds of feet down below, 600 feet to be exact, and 12,000 feet off into the dark and crisscrossing tunnels of the Robina mine, the rescue crews are still at work. The men and the supplies are still streaming in and out of the elevator in a seemingly endless supply. The men have not been working continuously. Actually, it's a very well-organized effort for all that, but they have been working hard. They take time off to sleep, and trucks have been shuttling loads of them back and forth between the Frosty Run shaft and a temporary dormitory 2 miles from here in the building that houses the main ventilation controls for the whole number 3 mine. But the men have been working so frequently that it seems as though it's been continuous. There are some here who have gone day after day without sleep. Company representatives like Bill Thompson and Vince Weisenberger, for instance. They've allotted themselves nap time of about 40 minutes or 1 hour a day. And the relatives of the missing men, the poor tortured people who have fathers, sons, and brothers down there in tunnel number 8. For them, the past 4 days have been a living nightmare. And many of them are still here in a special side room the company has set up for them. But now that many of the bodies have been recovered, the ranks are thinning. Now that word is coming that bodies are being found, it's apparent that the waiting relatives had sort of expected all along that their men are dead. But many of them still won't leave. And just like the men on the rescue teams, they refuse to give up hope. Not so long as there's one man left in the mine. And so they sit and they wait. Hour after countless hour, day after day, they sit and they wait in a torment of worry and unhappiness. There are those here trying to help those relatives, people like the almost saintly workers of the Salvation Army, people like the volunteer nurses brought here by the Red Cross, people like the friends and the neighbors, people like the other miners who have worked alongside the missing men. Those Salvation Army volunteers by now must have served a million cups of coffee. Their supply is endless. And they also provide little touches like a mountain of sandwiches, fresh fruit, and occasionally a hot meal like the bacon and eggs they served the rescue teams yesterday, the pancakes and the sausage today. And then there is something that cannot be measured. It's the spiritual help they give the relatives, the prayers, the words of comfort. I might just say a word about the other people who have taken part, the Bell Telephone Company, for instance, which provided mobile telephones for the reporters to send word to the outside world when the local telephone company either refused or was unable to provide communication. Reporters, too, who have taken a dedicated attitude toward their job. Men like our own Bill Steinbach, Al McDowell, Dave Parker, who worked until they were groggy with weariness. And one of our competitors, Herb Morrison, who remained here on the job since last Thursday, who catches catnaps sitting in a chair. fire service photographers who haven't had time to change clothes since before the weekend. And a woman right out of this world for kindness and hospitality. Mrs. Robert Stevenson, who opened her farmhouse a mile from the mine to provide warmth and homemade cookies to reporters by day and by the middle of the night. The civil defense people, the state troopers, and an especially talented guy named Jimmy Gerard, the assistant mine superintendent who was commanding the rescue work. The state mine inspectors and agents from the Federal Bureau of Mines, Bishop John Wright of the Catholic Diocese of Pittsburgh, Secretary of Mines Lou Evans, Tony Boyle, acting president of the Mine Workers Union, and dozens of grimy-faced heroes, yes, heroes, now out of sight, down below, at work in a tough, dangerous situation. Yes, it's a story of people, some grimly determined, others soggy with grief and despair, and all, yes, every last one, drooping with fatigue. The story is a sad one. It's one that's happened before and will probably, undoubtedly, happen again. But for now, it's a story that for communities here in the soft coal country of western Pennsylvania provides an epitaph in tears. An epitaph in tears for these men. Charles Locker, Elmer McCann, Charles Leeper, William Russell Wright, Samuel Rain, George Spellum, Andy Vizdas, Alan Sonner, Homer Pitts, Charles Van Divner, Mike Stanek, Frank Hudock, Joseph Talkish, Albert Cavalcanti, Norman Benninghoff, William Blacka, Warren McDowell, Albert Bronikowski, John St. Clair, John Santer, James Reibel, Adam Andrews, John Karliak, John Steech, Andrew Kanyuch, Eugene Zuzak, Paul Smolensky, Charles Seebeck, John Martonsik, Nicola Caramano, Alex Mara, Frank Boyd, Frank Hainzer, Franklin Reifensberg, Ernest Mollica, Hurley Stallmaker, and Arthur Labuns, men who gave their lives to the mine. This is Mike Levine.